ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादम् शङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् मनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः अस्थिरतद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरसुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। Let us recite from the verse 16. चतुर्विधा भजन्ते माम् जनाः सुकृतिनोऽर्जुन आर्तो जिज्ञासुरर्थार्थैः ज्ञानी च भरतर्षभ तेषां ज्ञानी नित्ययुक्तः एकभक्तिर्विशिष्यते प्रियो हि ज्ञानिनोऽत्यर्थम् अहं स च मम प्रियः उदाराः सर्व एवैते ज्ञानित्वात्मैव मे मतम् आस्थितः स हि युक्तात्मा मामेवानुत्तमां गतिम्। चतुर्विधाः सुकृतनः अर्जुन मां भजन्ते अर्जुन दिस् फोर् कैण्ड्स् आफ् पीपल् हू आर् सुकृतनः whose nature it is to perform virtuous deeds, who are pious people, they naturally worship me. Meaning that in their heart there is this automatically, this inspiration or desire to worship me. So these are my devotees who always take refuge unto me. of the devotees are said to be in four categories depending upon the purity of their heart. However, what is meant by a devotee is that they always resort, Lord Krishna says, they resort to me, the Ishvara. Here Lord Krishna does not necessarily talk as a particular person, but talks as Ishvara, who is the creator, sustainer, as illustrated, who is the self of all. This Ishvara, who is their own self, they always resort to me whenever they are in any need. Artha has a person who is in great distress. For becoming free from distress, he resorts to me. Meaning does not resort to any worldly entity, but resorts to me. Artha Arthi, this other devotee, he wants some material benefit, he wants some wealth or name or fame, something material he wants, all right? But for seeking that, he resorts to me. Important thing is, what do we resort to? Where do we go to fulfill our desires? So of the four kinds of devotees, the three kinds are those who have desires. And the fourth is one who is free from all the desires. But even those who want to fulfill their desires, important thing is, where do they resort to for fulfilling desires? That is a devotee of Lord or Ishvara who always resorts to Ishvara. It is true that all the devotees do not always resort to him. There are some who only remember God and take refuge unto him when they are in distress, otherwise perhaps they may not remember God. There are others who, whenever they want to fulfill a desire for some worldly gain, like money, etc., then they remember, meaning they will remember many more times, of course, because these desires are many. But again, they look up to Ishvara to fulfill their desires. There is a third one who wants to know, and who wants to know Ishvara. For knowledge also, this person only resorts to Ishvara. So progressively you find that devotion is becoming more and more mature. And the devotion ultimately gains its maturity in jnani when the devotee knows Ishvara as his own self. That is the most mature devotion. Thus these four devotees represent the four levels of maturity. And this maturity also is on account of the propensity of punya karma, of propensity of virtuous deeds. Greater the stock of virtuous deeds, purer my heart is going to be, and more faith or trust I am going to have in Ishvara. Because we only take refuge into that in whom we have trust, that here our desire will fulfill. When the trust arises in the mind, that is when we resort to whoever in whom we have the trust. So in these people, there is a trust that Ishvara will solve their problem. They are no doubt worldly people still, because they are seeking Ishvara's help for worldly desires, but still, important thing is that they have this trust and devotion that Ishvara will take care. And therefore, that devotion will mature. The one who starts with artha, meaning one who starts only remembering Ishvara, resorting to Ishvara when he is in distress, will then become an arthasi, meaning that he will go to Ishvara whenever there is any desire. And then someday he will become a jignasu. Someday in him this desire or this thought may arise as to who is he who is fulfilling the desires. Now he wants to know him. So desire for knowledge arises from tamas to rajas to sattva. And that culminates into knowing Ishvara as his own self. Udaraha sarva evaite tesham jnani visishyate. Lord Krishna says that the wise person is the most excellent among them all. Because nitya yukta hai, always join with me. Eka bhakti hi, always devoted only to me and to nothing else. Whereas other people, they approach Ishvara for fulfilling their desires. And therefore, the objects of desire are very important to them. Perhaps what they want is more important than even Ishvara. So, Eka Bhakti, they are devotees of Ishvara, all right, but they are also devotees of these worldly things. Whereas, this wise person worships me for my sake, and he does not want anything else from me other than me. Therefore, in the 18th verse, Udaraha Sarva Evaite, all of these are noble people. All the devotees are noble. They are all great. Jnani tu, however, the Jnani, the wise person, is indeed the most exalted. Mameva anuttamam gatim asthitaha. Because he has committed himself only to attain me and nothing else. Meaning he is the most discerning person. It is viveka or discernment in our life as to what it is that we want. And here is a person who has discerned in his life that the desire behind all the desires ultimately is only desire for Ishvara. What I am seeking through fulfilling various desires is nothing but Ishvara. When that discernment arises in life, everybody wants nothing less than the limitless. But most people do not realize this. When that realization comes, what am I seeking in my life? That I am seeking limitless. And that is Ishvara, that is God. And further, that He is myself. So not only this Jnani worships Ishvara only, but he worships Ishvara as his own self, meaning that he is looking at his own self and seeks to discover Ishvara there. He is not looking somewhere else, seeking to discover Ishvara, but then looking at his own self, seeking to discover Ishvara. So he has a recognition that what I am seeking is limitless, is Ishvara. And that Ishvara has to be ultimately known only as a self, then alone that quest can be fulfilled and not otherwise. That anything that does not include me, if Ishvara is different from me, he cannot be limitless. And therefore, in order that Ishvara is limitless, he should be my own self. This he recognizes as a result of teaching and everything else, but the idea is that this is his conviction. Asthitaha sahi yuktatma. Even though those are devotees also, they always go to the self. So they look at their own self to fulfill all their desires. And here, this one invokes his own self to fulfill the desire for the limitlessness. Mameva anuttamam gatim gantum asthitaha. That gantiv gati means gantabhyam. I am the only goal, desire which he is committed. Because other people, they come to me. But somebody wants health, somebody wants wealth, somebody wants heavens. For those things they come to me. Lord Krishna says, here is a devotee who comes to me for my sake. He does not want anything else from me. He wants only me from myself. Which makes sense anyway, but still people don't do that, as Lord Krishna will explain, because that viveka or discernment is not there. You know, what to ask for is also important, isn't it? We must have told you this story earlier of this old man who had three sons and he had a servant. And this servant served this old man. He was a very wealthy person. But the sons did not take much care of him. This servant stayed with him until the last and he served him very well. And so this old wealthy person in recognition of the services rendered by his servant, he wrote a will and said that each one of my sons will have the right to ask for any one thing from my property, and rest of the property will go to my servant. So after his death, the will is opened. The attorneys have come. Now the distribution of the wealth is taking place. The eldest son is invited. Says, well, you have the right to ask for any one thing from the property of your father. So he thought, and the biggest thing he asked for, he says, I want that factory and that business. Okay. Second son is invited. He says, you have the option to ask for any one thing. He was a happy-go-lucky fellow. He says, I want that house, beautiful mansion on the beach. Okay. The third son is invited. So you have the option to ask for any one thing. He says, I want the servant. So then you should know what to ask for. Ishvara says, ask for whatever you want. And we ask for various things, worldly things, but then here is really a mature person who says, I want you. Now, that is the result of a great deal of maturity. Whatever Swami would call emotional maturity, or Vedanta would call the sadhana chatushtha sampatti. Result of great maturity. When a person recognizes what it is that I want in life. Mameva anuttamam gatim asthitah gantum asthitah. He is set on the path of only attaining me. Who is the anuttamam gatim? So who is the end beyond which there is no end? I am the end beyond which there is no end. Sa kashtha sa paragatihi. Kathopanishad says, that's the parakashtha, that's the paragatihi. Purushanna param kinchit, sa kashtha sa paragatihi. Beyond Purusha, beyond the self, beyond Ishvara, there is nothing, nothing beyond that. He is all inclusive. The beauty about this Ishvara is, as we told in the subsequent verse, Ishvara is not an entity among many entities. That if you get Ishvara, then everything else is, you know, you are deprived of. No. This Ishvara is all inclusive. Therefore, this discriminating person knows that attaining Ishvara means attaining everything. And that's why nothing remains to be attained after attaining Ishvara. Nothing remains to be known after knowing Ishvara. And nothing remains to be attained after attaining Ishvara. When this wisdom is there, that is when a person wants nothing other than that. In the verse 19, with which we continue now, this wise person is further extolled. So Lord Krishna in many places extols or praises knowledge. Sometimes praises the wise person. Sometimes praises the devotee. Lord Krishna himself praises. Thereby conveying that this is very valuable. Most praiseworthy, very valuable to create in us a value for that. So let us read the verse number 19.
Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevasarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha.
Samahatma, so how is the wise person extolled? How is he praised? Samahatma sudurlabha. This Mahatma, Mahatma the great souled one, Mahanatma yasya saha Mahatma, whose atma the antahkaranam, whose heart is great, whose soul is great, the most noble person, Mahatma, whose heart is not narrow, who is not a narrow-minded person, who does not make any divisions, who does not have any paksha or any side, this is mine and that is not mine. Here his atma, his antahkaranam, his mind, his heart has become so large as to accommodate everything and everybody. Mahatma. In his heart, the divisions that this is mine and this is your, that division is not there. That this is my country, that is your country. My religion, your religion. Or whatever, even these divisions are not there. So in our heart some divisions are going to be there. We always have some preferences. We like something at the cost of something else, and therefore I like Hinduism, I don't like some other ism. I may like, people from certain this country and not other country. People of this skin and not some other skin. People of this language, not some other language. People belong to some mission and not other mission. People having certain ideas, certain beliefs and not other beliefs. So if you look at our mind, how we keep cutting and dividing things. Oh, he's not a Vedantin, forget it. He's not an Advaitin, let it go. He's not a Bhakta or devotee, he doesn't believe in God. Immediately people are dismissed from our heart. Oh, he comes from this religion, he comes from that country, oh, he speaks this language, he's... How we cut off things from our heart? It is one thing to have a commitment for something. That I have a commitment for, let's say Vedanta, Advaita, non-duality, my teacher, this parampara is fine. But if my commitment is at the exclusion of others, that I cannot tolerate anything else, I cannot accept anything else, I cannot be sympathetic to others, now that makes me a very narrow-minded person. Alpa-atma, not mahatma, kshudra-atma. Kshudra means one whose heart or mind is very narrow. Very little space in there to accommodate. And thus we have to become mahatmas. Without swerving from our own commitment. A mahatma does not mean everything is all right. Everything is equal or everything is all right. That's not the point. That all beliefs are the same and all everything is the same. That is not necessarily what he says or he has to believe that. But regardless of what the belief is, regardless of what the commitment is, regardless of what the person is, the reason why everything is accommodated and everybody is accommodated is because Vasudeva Sarvam. In the core, that person is Vasudeva. Vasuschasav Devaha Vasudeva. Devaha means the self-revealing, self-effulgent Lord, the consciousness. Vasu, one who dwells in everyone. So one who dwells as a self of all. So the wise person looks upon Vasudeva, Ishvara as self, he is identified with the self. He is identified with Ishvara. And as Lord Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Samoham Sarabhuteshu Name Dveshyosena Priya. Lord says that I equally abide in all the beings. Name Dveshya Na Priya. I do not hate anybody. I have no attachment for anybody, no partiality, no cruelty. Everybody and everything is the same for me. That is how vast or large-hearted Ishvara is. After all, when there is a mother or father, they may have 6, 7, 8 children, let us say. Not all of them are going to be equal. One or two may be brilliant, others may be middling, third may be dull. Somebody may be handsome, somebody not so handsome. They are all going to be different. But still,
they are my children. In that they are the same. Even though there are many differences at a given level, at a certain level, there is sameness in them all. And so also, there are differences, no doubt about that. No two things are identical, all personalities are different, all beliefs are different, everything is different. But in and through all the differences, there is samam, there is something that is same, something that is equal or identical in all of them. So what is the issue? The equal that obtains all of them, is that the issue or is that the important thing? Or the differences obtaining among people and things, are they important? What is important? Well, that will depend upon what it is that is important to me about my own self. If my individuality is important to me, if my distinctions and accomplishments are important to me, if my ego is important to me, meaning that when I cut myself to the size, first of all, that I am only so and so and nothing else, no, that's not me. That's how people say, that can't be me. And so that is not me, that is not me. See, when I say I am this, I am declaring I am nothing else also. Thus when my idea about me is confined, then naturally everyone is going to be different from me and nobody has a place in my heart. So narrower my idea about myself is, more isolated more distinguished I make myself, more isolated I make myself, less and less accommodative I am going to be. More attached I am, more demanding I am, then I am more intolerant I become. And then I cannot tolerate anything which does not comply with my behavior, with my expectation, with my beliefs, with my whatever. Such strong identification. It's one thing to have beliefs, one thing to have what you have. It's another thing to be strongly identified with that, such that nothing else has a place. That's not a Mahatma. A Mahatma is a noble soul or large-hearted person, in whose heart there is room for everybody and everything. Not that he's obliging other people. Not that he's tolerating other people also. It is not even tolerance. Much beyond that. It is love and unconditional love. The unconditional love that he has for himself is the love that he has for everything. And that is why all differences melt away in that. Not that the wise person does not recognize differences. He recognizes differences, as we also recognize. But then, the recognition of differences doesn't have an impact. The differences do not impact. His accommodation or his love is not impacted in any way. As this person will be described in the 12th chapter, Advesta Sarabhutanam, he has no hatred for anybody, meaning nothing in the creation invokes hatred from him. Even a person who hates him or her, even that hating person also does not invoke a hatred. It is not up to us not to hate somebody. I do not desire to hate somebody, hatred simply arises from my heart, that's all. When I cannot tolerate something, then automatically I become intolerant, I start disliking, I find myself hating. It's not that I decide to hate, I'm going to hate this person. Hatred is not something we do deliberately, it is something that happens. Meaning that it is not, I do not have freedom not to hate somebody, that's what I'm saying.
When Lord Krishna says a wise person does not hate anybody, meaning that hatred just does not arise. Nothing invokes hatred in him. That button is no more there. No one can push that button because not there. And therefore, nothing can create a hatred. Maitraha, Karunaha. His friendly talk. All of these are not something that we can will. Karuna means compassion. We cannot will compassion. It has to arise. Friendship we cannot will. It has to arise. He is friendly to all. He is compassionate to all. Meaning everything only invokes compassion from him. Nothing invokes hatred. Everything invokes compassion. So this is nature. Thus in compassion, now Buddhism emphasizes compassion. They embrace everything in compassion. Or Christianity would emphasize love. Embrace everything in love. Or Hinduism would emphasize non-violence. All amount to the same thing. Whether you call it non-violence, or you call it compassion, you call it love, they all amount to the same thing, the words are different. Not understanding the dimensions of what these words indicate, we may think that they are different. That Hinduism doesn't talk of love. Again, love is not something that you can will. It is something that has to arise. And love will automatically become evident when a certain state of mind is there, which is non-violence. When there is no violence whatever in my mind, then what there is love, what there is compassion. Same thing. Then this non-violence is very practical because there is a tendency to violate. We have the tendency to violate. If you recognize that and work on that tendency, and slowly, slowly eliminate that tendency, then no separate work needs to be done for being compassionate or loving. It will automatically happen. Meaning what obstructs my love or compassion is my tendency to violate, tendency to dislike, tendency to hate, tendency to not tolerate, tendency to retaliate, tendency to attack. All these tendencies arise from intolerance, from narrow-mindedness, from lack of accommodation, from, you know. So when I work on that tendency, automatically the compassion, love will arise. And so, Swami used to say in the olden days, you know, says love is a verb, is a word, not a verb. In the beginning I didn't understand what is mind, what is the difference between what's, you know. But then what is verb is a kriyapada. Means when you can do something. Love is not something you can do. That idea is, it's not something you can do. It is something that has to happen. So even if you say love thy neighbor is love yourself, you know, it's not that you can love, just you cannot will that love. You can treat your neighbor as you treat yourself. That you can do because treat or do something, we have the freedom of will. We have the free will with reference to action. We do not have free will with reference to knowledge. Similarly, no free will with reference to love, etc. No free will. So you can treat your neighbor as you treat yourself. That you can do. But love thy neighbor as you love yourself, that has to happen, is not something that you can do. But then, it is a purity of your heart. Purer the heart becomes, love becomes naturally manifest. Because love is my own nature, and what we need to do is to let it surface, let it become manifest, remove the inhibiting factors, remove the intolerance, remove strong attachment. So, because stronger I'm attached to something, stronger the aversion is going to be for something else. Attachment of one thing is going to bring about aversion for something else. And what does attachment show? Attachment shows a dependence on my part and I cannot do without something. Something is so important that for my security, for my well-being, that I cannot do without that. So when I raise something to such a value in my life, I look upon myself as so helpless and needy that something becomes so important that I just cannot do without it. Then he is going to create an equal aversion for something else, which will come in the way of my holding on to it. Attachment will cause aversion. And so this wise person has given up attachment, not holding on to any one thing, recognizing that attachment arises from my perception of myself as a needy person. Even when he was needy, he always resorted to Ishvara and to nothing else. And then that neediness is false. Neediness is not the true nature. When it goes away, he becomes totally free from need. No attachment. Therefore, no aversion. Say, attachment and aversions are the factors that inhibit the manifestation of that love. Now, in his heart, love for everything and everybody. Not everybody, everything, actually. Not only human beings, all lives, Vasudeva, Sarvamiti. What an amazing drishti this is. Amazing vision, Vasudeva, Sarvam. Nowhere do you find this, not even in India. In Buddhism, Jainism, nowhere do you find this, that everything is Vasudeva. Vasudeva means Ishvara, the self of all, the self-effulgent consciousness, which is the self of all, which dwells as self of all. So Vasudeva, the one who dwells in everyone, and one in whom everyone dwells also. So Vasuschaso Deva. So Vasadi Sarvasmin is Vasudeva. One who dwells in all is called Vasudeva. Or Vasadi Sarvam Asmin, or everything dwells in him. See, this one word reveals two important things. Vasudeva means the self-shining, self-revealing consciousness or Ishvara who dwells in all, who is the self of all. Or second interpretation is that he is the one in whom everything dwells, meaning that he is the self of the universe. What is myself is the self of the universe. One meaning is tvampada, other meaning is tatpada. One meaning is self, other meaning is Ishvara. Vasudeva saram. Everything is Vasudeva. This everything, see, Vasudeva is in the nominative case and singular. Sarvam means all. Sarvam means what? All. That include not only human beings, all kinds of living beings. Not only living beings, all sentient, insentient things, that is all sarvam. All means does not exclude anything. All is one. How can all be one? There is a contradiction right here. Vasudeva sarvam. All this is one. How can all be one? This you find in Upanishad also. Brahma yavedam vishvamidam varishtam. The entire Vishwam, the entire universe is Brahman. Sarvam khalu idam Brahma. All this indeed is Brahma. Sarvam means all, many, and Brahman is one. Many is one. How can many be one? In the technical language, the Vasudeva and Sarvam, both of these are placed in the same case. They enjoy the relationship called Samadhikaranyam, placed in the same case, meaning both of them should mean the same. Where the literal meaning is contradictory, that Ishvara is one and all this is many. So how can one be many? Only when one of them is right, other is not right. When many is mithya and one is satyam, then only it can be. If one actor is a king also, and a beggar also, and minister also, and so many things, then all these many things may be, should be mithya, then alone must be appearance of one. Similarly, all of this is the appearance of Vasudeva. Vasudeva appearing as Sarvam, Vasudeva appearing as all, he alone appears, that was described earlier. Lord Krishna himself said, how yes, his twofold prakriti, twofold nature, apara prakriti and para prakriti, the matter and the spirit, both are his expressions. The matter is outer casing, and the consciousness, the one that dwells in that, both are nothing but his expressions. So Lord Krishna said, I alone express myself as this whole universe of names and forms. I am the Asti Bhati Priyam. The heavy name and form is, it shines and is dear. So Vasudeva Sarvam, just as one gold alone appears as all the ornaments, or one water appears as number of waves, and so also one Ishvara Asti Bhati Priyam Satchit Ananda appears as this whole universe. Swami, don't tell me Ananda appears as this universe. No? Sat means existence, that is understandable. Chit means awareness, that is also understandable. Ananda means happiness. You mean this universe is a manifestation of happiness? That is impossible. But this happiness becomes distorted because of ignorance. This manyness can be only explained because of ignorance. And therefore, whatever looks to us as not Ishvara. In fact, there is a tremendous resistance to this very idea that everything is God. And it is enough, that statement is enough to throw away Hinduism. You say, everything is God, what are you talking? Where is God everywhere? You know, they will show us what is happening in the universe right now. What kind of conflicts are going on? What cruelty is there? You say that everything, Ishvara is everything, and Ishvara is doing everything. Your God is so cruel. Now what happens is, when we say Ishvara is everything, they only point out those things, that's all. Only a few things. Whenever any statement is made, they always find out the extreme cases. But there are many beautiful things, there are many mountains and rivers and forests and flowers and trees and birds and the whole nature that is beautiful. That doesn't come, you know, that never comes to their mind. They only think of some shooting going on someplace. Your Ishvara is in the murder? You mean as though the whole world is only confined to a few human beings, that's all there is. There is nothing else in the world, and what happens in human society is all that matters to the whole universe. Doesn't matter anyway. What's a human being? He occupies what place in the universe? Nothing. They say it's an accident actually. Some people say it's an accident. Life is an accident. So our insistence upon evaluating and judging everything based on what happens in human society. But Swamiji, still, at least you have to explain this. Human society also should be explained anyway. Even if it is in a very little minority, still it is there. And so the Vedantin answer is ignorance. Because that everything and everybody loves himself. That love is always there, unquestionably. Love for the self is unconditional. Unfortunately, not understanding that love becomes distorted as hatred for somebody, but in hatred for somebody also, there is love for one's own self. That is never denied. Swamiji, if you love, if everybody loves their own self, then how come we find some people who want to commit suicide? That also is not hatred for oneself, it is only when this body which was thought to be self has become a source of pain, so then he wants to get rid of the body, which is also nothing but expression of love for his own self. The idea is that Love for one's own self is evident. Everything wants to survive. There is love for existence. Nothing wants to die. Everything wants to exist. Everything wants to survive. Everything wants to live and live happily. That everything strives to live and live happily. All living beings. That just definitely shows love for one's own self. Therefore, even though outwardly we may find cruelty, that cruelty also is nothing but the distortion of the love for the self. So we may say that yes, there are distorted expressions of Ishvara. That you may expect. There are distorted expressions. That is possible. That when the mirror is crooked, then my face may appear crooked. But that is not because the face is crooked. It is a mirror that makes it appear to be so. And so also, some personalities have become so crooked. And still, the Atma, the Self, manifesting through that personality, remains the same, Asti Bhati Priyam. Electricity remains the same, regardless of what the appliance is. Appliance may be responsible for heat, another one for cold, something or something else. They're all the differences all belong to the upadhi, to names and forms. But in spite of these differences, there is still what is manifesting through them is one. Vasudeva Sarvam. Now, to be able to appreciate Vasudeva as everything, in the eyes of this wise person, he looks at the differences and still does not count them at all. Just as when we look at many ornaments and still see one gold, because the names and four ornaments are what we call negated. In Vedanta they call it Badha. Badha Samandhikaran. Badha means negation. When I'm watching the annual cultural program in the school, and when I see my son acting as Rama, then even though my eyes see Rama, my mind's eye only see the sun. So there is a negation of Rama. Then I appreciate the sun. So it's negatable. Vedantin says mithyam is negatable. And so the names and forms are negatable. They do not in any way affect the truth. Whether he becomes Rama or Ravana, he remains my son regardless. So therefore, that costume or appearance doesn't in any way affect the truth. And so also whatever is apparently appearing at the surface, whether it is love or hatred, nothing ever affects the self. If it affects the self, then it's a different matter, but it does not. As we have said a number of times, a person who is extremely cruel also, he still remains a loving person in the core. If that person is given the right environment, then the love which is there automatically manifests. Before his own little child, he becomes a very loving father. A loving husband, a loving grandfather, a loving friend, he does. That in the core, that love is never denied, regardless of how the outer behavior is, that is never compromised. Means the truth can never be affected by what is false, or satyam cannot be affected by mithya. So one who sees the satyam in and through the mithya, in whose mind the names and forms, the outer costumes, they get discarded. That's what Lord Krishna said earlier. Trivihi gunamayahi bhavaihi ebihi isaravidam jagat mohitam. That since I manifest putting on the costume of the sattva, rajasthamas, three gunas, therefore people become deluded. Here is a person who is not deluded, that's all. So he does not evaluate anybody based on their personality. He sees a person which is manifesting through the personality. Jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti. Evam sarvatmanam mam pratipadyate sa mahatma. He is called mahatma in the real sense. Mam sarvatmanam, one who knows me as the self of all. Natat samaha anyasti adhikova. There is nobody equal to him, let alone anybody being better than him. Atah sudurlabha. He is durlabha, sudurlabha, extremely difficult to obtain, extremely difficult to be. So meaning to be Mahatma is a very difficult thing. To be a wise person like that, in whose perception there is nothing but Ishvara, nothing but Self. Even Ishvara also is known as a Self. It's not that the wise person sees Krishna everywhere, as separate from Him. Because if Krishna means certain form, you cannot see the form all the time. If that seeing involves some kind of an imagination, that cannot happen all the time. That seeing is not seeing, it is being. It's not that he sees everything as Ishvara, he has become one. Because then only it is spontaneous, otherwise if it involves effort, it cannot always be there. So when it is said that he sees everything as Ishvara, means that he sees everything as his own Self. Sudurlabha. Lord Krishna says that, I am easy, I am everywhere. This Mahatma is not everywhere. I am everywhere, in every name and form I am there. Lord says that, I am everywhere, I am easy to gain. This Mahatma is very difficult to gain. We said earlier, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yadad siddhe. Of the thousands, there is some rare one who even wants to grow spiritually, in whom there is this desire to carry out inner growth. Yadadāpi siddhānām kaschin māṁ vetti tattvatah. Of the thousands who are striving, it is some rare one who knows me in truth. So Lord Krishna says, this is a very rare phenomenon that somebody has this vision that everything is a Self. Bahunam janmanamante. It is the result of striving over a number of births. Bahunam janmanamante. At the end of many, many births. Bahunam janmanam gnanat samskarashrayanamante. When a person has lived life intelligently, and that to a number of births, that is when this happens. Not that as a little number of births this will happen, no. Living life intelligently for a number of births. What is intelligently? A life that is other-centered and not self-centered. A self-centered life is an unintelligent life. Because more I satisfy myself with the ego, narrower I become, smaller I become, more wanting and inadequate I become. This equation is not recognized by people. And Lord Krishna will talk about that in the next verse itself. But most people do not recognize the equation. That more I feed into my sense of individuality, more I feed into my need for ego gratification, more I'm smaller and more inadequate and more wanting I become. It's amazing. More I supply, more wanting I become. Ego being what it is, more I try to make it happy, then more needy it becomes. So when, first of all, this change has to happen, that is called the great maturity. It's a practical thing, that more I try to satisfy my ego, then the extent to which I live a life which is meant for ego gratification, or self-promotion, always promoting myself. And that is the nature of, that is our nature, to always promote ourselves. And then the self-promotion becomes little subtle. Since we study Vedanta and everything, therefore, it will not be a very gross promotion. That is, snatch something away from somebody, or throw somebody out, etc. It may not be like that. We are not so crude. But then that the tendency of self-promotion remains in some form or the other. And that becomes clear whenever I am seeking reward for something that I do. That also becomes clear whenever I am disappointed. So whenever I experience disappointment, means that some expectation was there for what I did. Even when I am other-centered, even when helping others, I am a charitable person, a helpful person, doing things for others, then also when there is a disappointment, because the other for whom I did something did not acknowledge. Swami, there is no appreciation. There is no acknowledgement here. That means that there was some self-interest there also. Otherwise, I could not have been. That's all right. Still, it is better than always self-serving interest. But then, one who lives other-centered life. As he, in the 9th chapter, Lord Krishna will say that even being a religious does not mean that you are a spiritual person. A spiritual person is an other-centered person. A religious person is a person who worships Ishvara. And you may be a very religious person. Trevidyamam somapaha pudapapaha. Lord Krishna says that people perform very elaborate rituals. Propitiating me, propitiating Ishvara, they perform elaborate rituals. So very religious person. And performing rituals as stipulated. But then as a little ritual, what does he ask? He asks for heavens, asks for some worldly gain. He has not yet become a spirit, not emotionally, he has not become a mature person. A mature person is a person who recognizes. And this will be talked about in the next verse itself. What is the reason why people don't know you? People don't take refuge into you. People do not resort to you. Bahunam janmanamante gnanatha samskarashrayanam. When a whole birth is spent for accumulating samskaras or tendencies which are conducive for knowledge. You see, there are tendencies conducive for pleasure and tendencies conducive for knowledge, understand? Meaning that a person can perform punya karma or he can perform what we call a religious action or a virtuous action. And still, if the desire behind that is for some worldly gain or for some ego gratification, then that tendency or samskara is not conducive for knowledge. That samskara is only conducive for giving him some worldly pleasure. So what is necessary to accumulate or acquire samskara means tendencies. Tendencies which are conducive for knowledge. Meaning that which creates vairagya, dispassion in me. That which makes me free from attachment and aversion. So there is a way of doing things by which the attachment and aversions, they grow. There is another way where the attachment and aversions, they reduce. So those people living life, accumulating the tendencies. What is the tendency? Tendency is a certain pattern. And by deliberately acting in a certain way, I create a certain pattern in my mind. What is deliberate in the beginning then becomes a habit. Meaning that if I make it a habit to always go to that temple which comes on my way every day, in the beginning, and when I make it a habit, make it practice, in course of time becomes habit. This person says, I walk 5 miles every day, Swami. My shoes have had 2,000 miles, This is like the car, they say 100,000 miles. The shoes, 2,000 miles. They need to be replaced. Not because that, at least you feel that the car is now 100,000 miles. You should replace. Car seems to be all right, but still. How 2,000 miles? 18 months? 5 miles a day? So now if I do not go for a walk, I either feel guilty, I do not feel good, I don't feel comfortable. So now it has become a samskara. It has now become a vasana. It is, you know, this is called a vasana, samskara, or a tendency. It becomes a habit. So we have to create those habits in us. Already lots of habits are there. Some habits are healthy habits. Many habits are perhaps hurtful habits. There are many habits because of which we hurt ourselves. Therefore, we have to deliberately create habits which are helpful habits. So, that is why Lord Krishna said, kamaha krodha lobha. So this nashanam, atmanaha nashanam, this anger, lust, greed, all of these are nothing but damaging my own self. So living a life wherein I keep damaging myself, living a life where I keep on nourishing myself. Not nourishing the ego, nourishing the spirit. So thus when a person has lived life intelligently, when there arises vairagya. Vairagya means dispassion, meaning freedom from attachment and aversion. So when our commitment is, I want to get rid of this, I want to get rid of attachment and aversion. I want to get rid of this anger, this greed, this whatever. So all these divisive tendencies I have. I want to become free from it. That is what binds me. When I realize that the real bondage in my life is not something that the world places upon me. That also can be there, but the real bondage is what my mind places upon me. That I cannot tolerate something. That's a bondage. I must have something. Bondage. I cannot do without something. Bondage. I cannot put up with this bondage. So this is bondage. When I recognize that is a bondage, and that is where the freedom has to be achieved, then I work for that. Everybody loves freedom. And everybody constantly works for freedom also. Depends upon what my notion of freedom is. If I feel that I am bound or I am helpless because of lack of money, because of lack of prestige, because of lack of power, then naturally I will seek to acquire those things. When I recognize that the real bondage is not lack of these worldly things, because possessing them also cannot make me more secure than what I am. And that security has to be attained from my own self. That freedom has to be attained from my own self, from my own impulses, from my own attachment, aversions. When that becomes clear, then the priority becomes very clear. Then I want to become free from these binding factors. So that is jnanartha samskarashrayanam janmanam. So when a person lives a life wherein he or she constantly strives to give up the attachment and aversion, not encourage them. My likes and dislikes, they want to control my mind and they want to dominate whatever all I do, and I do not allow that. That's where I have the freedom. I exercise my freedom in not allowing the likes and dislikes to control me. And I assert my value, that will control me. My value of freedom. Freedom from these, so, tayor nuvashamagachet tau yasya paripanthino. That these are enemies. These are my inner enemies. I don't want to be controlled by them. When that commitment is there, then they have to go. But because they are so entrenched for so many births, ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam, this tree of samsara, of likes and dislikes, attached, becomes so deeply rooted that asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. The asanga shastra, or the weapon of asangada, weapon of dispassion also, must become very strong as well as very sharp. So there Shankaracharya explains that this weapon must be sharpened constantly. Like in the olden days, those barbers, you know, they do something, all everybody. I'm sure the carpenters also, after using the chisel for some time, sharpen it. So also this weapon of Vairagya needs to be sharpened again and again and again on the stone of Viveka, as Shankaracharya explains. Abhyasa kaunte Vairagya chakriyate. The Vairagya requires to be practiced again and again. To make it firm. Because some of the tendencies have become so strong that unless I create an equally strong tendency, until then, the other tendency will throw it out. Because inside also there is this competition for space. And some fellows have occupied that space and they don't want to relinquish it naturally. And therefore, I must create a strong tendency of dispassion. Thus, Vairagya, Samadhi Shatka Sampatti, Shama, Dama, Uparama, Bahunam Janmanamante, these are the Jnanartha Samskara. The tendency is called Vairagya, which arises from Viveka, and Shama, the tranquility of mind, Dama, the control of the senses, these Titiksha, the forbearance. These qualities I can cultivate. And thus, a diligent effort to cultivate these qualities over how many births? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan so samapto jnanavan prapta paripaka jnana. Knowledge we all have. Prapta paripaka jnana. The knowledge has to become mature. We have the knowledge. Except that it remains as long as in the class. And then some other factors seem to dominate us, attack us, and the effect of this goes away. Then we feel so sad about ourselves, you know, I am no good Swamiji, I am listening to Vedanta. Don't say that. It only means that that's a pound of punyena shravanam kuryat, listen again and again and again, because this tendency has to become strong. So the example that they give is like writing. One is a writing on water. You write on water and right away disappears. Second is writing on sand. You write, it remains for some time and the wind comes and it wipes it out. Third is writing on the rock. Regardless of what storms come, the writing does not go. That is called samskara. The writing is samskara. So samskaras are there, but depending on you have to make them dhrada. You have to make them very deeply rooted. So that the water flow and the storms also cannot remove them. So understand that our knowledge also becomes mature to the extent that we acquire the samskaras. Everybody has a knowledge. Everybody is listening and everybody knows. But the thing is, what is required is to make it more and more mature by jnanartha samskara, by deliberate making an effort to acquire those tendencies which are conducive for retaining this knowledge, for gaining the knowledge and retaining the knowledge. We require both gaining knowledge, having gained, to retain it. That is why the sadhana chatushtaya sampattihi, this fourfold qualification, viveka, vairagya and samadhi shatka sampattihi. We have to nourish them. Those tendencies are there in us. We have tendency for vairagya. We have tendency samadama. We have them. But we should nourish them. There are anger, etc. So what we find up nourishing? In us also, the devi tendencies are there, the asuri tendencies are there, the divine tendencies are there, the demoniac both are there. Which one I will nourish? Nourishing the divine tendencies. Then the demoniac tendencies have to be subdued again and again and again, and they rise. Because this battle between devata and asuras goes on. Someday this fellows win, sometimes those fellows win. Similarly, that battle goes on in our heart also. But more and more we want that the devatas should win. And so their victory should increase. For that, of course, Lord Krishna is required on our paksha, on our side. That is why mad bhaktaha, my devotee, Because in this battle, spiritual battle also, we need help, no doubt about that. We need help from Ishvara. All His grace is necessary. So, bhunam janmanamante, at the end of many such births, jnanavan mam prapadyate. It is not that the wise person reaches me, jnanavan, he reaches me and becomes wise. Or he gains a total maturity, put it this way, that he gains total maturity in wisdom. And what's the maturity? Vasudeva sarvam. Everything is Vasudeva. This is what his heart tells him, without any effort. That's the greatest maturity of knowledge. Samahatma, this great soul one, this most noble one, in whose heart there is no division at all. Mam prapadyate, so sudurlabha, he is very rare indeed. So calling it very rare is extolling. Saying that a Mahatma is rare, this wise person or great soul one is rare, means Arjuna, so this is very valuable. More rare a thing is, more valuable it is. He is the most valuable. And that's why there should be value in our heart, to become that. So that's the goal that is presented to us. This becomes our... So Lord Krishna describes this Mahatmas again and again, so becomes a role model. How can we mold ourselves? For that this picture is given again and again. Okay. We'll have a break and we'll continue with the next verse after the break.